Welcome back. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley is behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. That's how you join the show. We'll get back to the phone lines here in just a few minutes as we discuss the Joe Girardi situation. I think it is time for the Phillies to move on. Does that sound like that is imminent? The quote from Dave Dombrowski tonight to Scott Lauber in the Inquirer does not make it sound like a change is on the horizon, but yet did not say that Joe is the manager, you know, no matter what the rest of the season. We'll get back to all that. Your take on Girardi after last night's meltdown and the famous person you share a birthday with. As we've got some great answers tonight. We'll get back to all that. But right now we talk to Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad after what may have been the most ridiculous loss of either of our lifetimes. Bob, how you doing?
Joe, how are you, man? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been a weird 24 hours here on WIP because a lot going on, obviously, in Philadelphia sports. But when there's a loss like that last night, it's what people want to react to and talk about. Bob, you know, we've had some bad ones over the past couple of years, but was there a moment last night during that thing where you kind of started to realize it might rattle? I was saying the post game last night, I felt a murmur in the crowd as soon as Alonso hit the double down the line. They're still up four runs, and you kind of felt like, uh-oh, this might go bad.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, and I don't know exactly how you quantified that loss last night, but just to kind of put that in perspective, I read a stat today from ESPN. The previous 330 times the Mets trailed by six runs in the ninth inning, they went on to lose the game. So it's a different way to look at what transpired last night, and it was, you know, there's so many different words you could use to describe it. Ridiculous, laughable, embarrassing, unacceptable. I mean, it was an all-timer, that's for sure.
Bob, Joe Girardi here. I mean, you and I have talked about him before. I think he's been a disappointment in Philadelphia. And I think it's starting to get to the point where everyone is talking about this. And I blame the Phillies a little bit because they didn't pick up the option on his contract. They didn't give him a new deal. Dave DeBrassi's been pretty tepid whenever asked about him since he got to Philadelphia. What do you think of this? I mean, tonight, before you hopped on about an hour ago, I saw in the Inquirer, Scott Lauber had talked to Dombrowski and he tried to take some of the blame off of Joe. But I'm sure you remember this, Bob. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now, Matt Klentak did a press conference in the dugout after they had lost, I think, four in a row to the Marlins or something, and said, Gabe Kapler's our manager the rest of the season. And that kind of stopped all the conversation. The Phillies still haven't done that. What's your take on this situation? Because it feels like it's what people are talking about the Phillies and Girardi right now.
Listen, I don't think the Phillies want to fire Joe Girardi right now. I think that they feel it's still very early. It's only the first week of May. It's kind of a bad look for the organization. You go in with all these expectations. You know, you kind of want to set this idea that, you know, we're going to stay the course. We're going to let this thing play out and be fair. That being said, I mean, they went from potentially setting up a situation where they could win three out of four this weekend to, with the rain out tonight, now hoping to I would say, split over the next 2 days. I think that they're certainly at a disadvantage in terms of starting pitchers over the next 2 days. So let's just say they lose two out of three, and now you go out west and you're playing a Mariners team that's scuffing a little bit right now, but they're very good at home, and then you have to go play the Dodgers for four games. So, you know, after that, you come back from this West Coast trip, and you're, I don't know, at best probably 14-20, let's say. You know, just assuming they lose two out of three in Seattle and maybe three out of four to the Dodgers. At that point, you're about 22% of the way through your season. You have an off day there to kind of regroup. I mean, if that's where they're at come next Monday, I just don't know at what point you say, how much further can we go with this? And I think that the biggest argument against Joe Girardi at this point is, could it be worse? Is it going to be any worse? And I think that's what you kind of have to ask yourself. It almost feels like a situation where there's only upside in making a move. And, you know, you don't want to see people lose their jobs. You don't want to see people get fired. But I think you have to kind of weigh this out and say, look at the financial investment they've made. Look at the expectations they have. Look at how they've played. And it's kind of harder and harder each passing day to kind of say, yeah, you know, we should stay the course on this.
Yeah, it is. Bob, now, if a change happens, and I think we're both on the same page, nothing is imminent. That's going to happen tonight or tomorrow or even, you know, Monday. But if something did happen, you know, in the next month or so, have you thought about who might be the interim manager? I mean, Dusty Watson's on the staff. I think that is a logical choice. Jim Leland's name gets brought up because the relationship, I don't know if he's even interested. He's 77 years old. And I, Bob, I brought up Sam Fuld as a guy who was a coach, now in the front office. He did an interview for the Red Sox job, so I don't know where his head's at, but he's obviously here and has a very unique baseball background here. Have you thought about you know, the idea of who could be next if this happened?
No, I really haven't. I would think that they would probably go the more traditional route. You know, I know, to be honest with you, I haven't really given it that much of consideration because I just have never really thought that they would do it. You know, last night for me, honestly, and I mean, I've tweeted and I've written things in the past where I've said, you know, this team seems to consistently lack juice. Like there's just like this lack of energy that seems to permeate this team. And it has for multiple seasons. And, you know, it's probably unfair to put it all on the manager, but I said, you kind of have to give him some time here. There's a lot of new parts. They have some defensive deficiencies. Let them get acclimated and see. But when you have a loss as ridiculous as it was last night, it was really the first time for me where I said, wow, you know, maybe this is actually in play. So, I haven't really dug into it too much, but I do think that it's a fair conversation at this point. I think 2-3 weeks ago, you know, when they got off to a little bit of a slow start and people wanted to talk about moving on, I thought that that was fast. I thought that was a little bit unfair, but you know, I think you kind of take a pause today during this off day. And I do think for the first time, you really have to kind of consider it. So it will be interesting to see what direction they go if they were to make a move.
Bob, let's talk about the issues on the field besides just the manager and the direction of the team. So it's not just the Phillies, it's everyone, but Major League Baseball changed the baseballs. And I think purposefully, probably for bigger reasons than just this season, but they're trying to change the balls here and the ball's flying less. I mean, Bob, I'm sure you noticed it. It was Reese Hoskins a couple nights ago. I feel like every night I'm watching games, there's 3 or 4 times a night across baseball, someone hits a ball and they crush it. And they have that look about them and they take that first step out of the box like they know they've got it. And it's out at the wall or it's at best a double, you know, right around the warning track. The baseball has changed. And unfortunately for the Phillies, they're a team built on sluggers and home runs. How big of a deal do you think this is? Do you think it evens out or is this the new baseball for this year?
Well, let me ask you a question first. How would you describe this Phillies offense? Like, if you had to assess the Phillies offense thus far.
Feast or famine, like on their good nights, they're great. Like last night, you know, for the most part, the 7 runs, and they have a bunch of these games like that. And then when they don't hit, it's nothing.
Right, and I'm right there with you. And then you kind of step back and you look at it and say, they have the second best OPS in the National League. They have the 4th best OPS overall. And to your point, I mean, I think that kind of illustrates what is happening around the game and what is happening with the baseball. I mean, I don't think that there's any stretch in which you would say that the Phillies are a good or an above average offense right now. If you watch them night in, night out, you'd say they leave a lot to be desired. But when you then step back and look at the numbers across the board and say, wow, like they're a top 5 offense in terms of OPS, which for me is, I think, the most telling stat of them all, you know, it's pretty amazing. So I think that this is something that's going to correct. I think that baseball probably is looking at this and saying, no, this is not good. You look at averages around the game. You look at the power numbers dipping around the game. And I don't think it's very good for the product. So it kind of feels like one of these things to me. And I know that you take up some space in the gambling realm. I kind of feel like right around the end of this month, maybe the middle of June, things are going to start to autocorrect. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the baseball change and the run production kind of soar as we go into the summer. That's just a hunch, a little bit speculative. I've talked to a couple people that kind of feel the same way. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if that were to happen.
Yeah. And I think even the last week batting average is up a little bit. So maybe it's, and I know it's terrible weather here, but maybe as across the country, we get a little bit warmer, it starts to go the way you're thinking. Bob, the other side of this is pitching. And it's interesting is when we're taking calls and talking to fans, the perception right now is their offense needs to be better. The pitching has been fine, but yet to go off what you said, you look at the stats, pitching really hasn't been fine when looking at across the league. Like the Phillies bullpen is bottom 5 again. You know, their ERA, not where you want it to be. Again, across the league. It doesn't feel bad, but if most of these teams are only giving up 2 or 3 runs a night and they're giving up 4, it is certainly a difference. What's your feeling on let's start with the bullpen. A bad night last night, but overall with where the bullpen is at right now.
Yeah, they haven't been great. You know, I think that you look at their primary relievers, they've done a nice job in most spots. They haven't had a ton of blown saves up until last night. There wasn't anything that you would really say, wow, that's completely ridiculous. And a couple of guys have thrown the ball fairly well. But like you said, you come into tonight, I believe entering play tonight, they had the 6th worst bullpen ERA in all of baseball. And so you kind of are right back to where you were, you know, and even before last night, I believe that they were like 20th or 21st in terms of ERA, entering play against the Mets. So it has been slightly below average and now it seems to be kind of trending back to where it's been the past few seasons, certainly problematic. But you know, I think when you look at the issues, with this team kind of across the board, you still kind of feel like Well, the bullpen may not be the biggest problem, even though, you know, statistically speaking, it certainly is becoming increasingly of a concern.
Bob, we had a caller earlier who mentioned the idea of at what point do the Phillies consider taking Rhys Hoskins out of the lineup, you know, not every day, but like once in a while. I mean, he's really struggling, and they actually have the options to do it now. I mean, Alec Bohm has hit for basically 3 weeks. Johan Camargo has shown versatility. There's Didi there at shortstop. Like, they actually could do it now, and in the years past, they really had no other option but to run him out of first base. Your thoughts on the way Rhys is playing right now? I know he's streaky, but we haven't seen the hot streak yet.
Yeah, I mean, last 15 games, he's hitting 155 with a 495 OPS. You know, everybody likes Rhys Hoskins. He comes up a few years ago. You kind of expect him to be the face of the franchise, the guy that's going to lead the Phillies into their next glory run here. You know, and obviously he gets help from Bryce Harper and all of that, but it hasn't materialized. And if he's going to play the defense that he plays on a consistent basis, he has to be better offensively. And you're not just talking about a bad week now. You're talking about a pretty tough stretch overall. I mean, his season numbers across the board are down. You know, hitting 187 right now, only 17 hits and 91 at bats, only two homers. I mean, he's in the lineup to drive the ball. He has not done that. And I think at some point you kind of have to consider, hey, you know, we understand that we want him to be a big part of this offense, but it's not happening. And I mean, they have to show more urgency. You know, this team for years has just not displayed the urgency that you would expect. It doesn't correlate to the expectation. And I think that they are reaching a point where they have to act accordingly. And if it were me, I think I would seriously consider, you know, reducing Rhys Hoskins' role at this point. And I know that some people probably look at that and say, wow, that's an overreaction. That's crazy. You know, he's still one of their best hitters. But, I mean, look at the numbers, and he just isn't right now.
Bob, are you concerned, and should we be with Bryce Harper's elbow? I mean, it's been a few weeks. There's no change. He's not going to play the outfield for a while. I wonder at this point how they're going to acclimate him back to the outfield, because it just feels like I don't think they want to push it and he gets hurt worse, and it's like this weird thing where he could just DH for now. I don't have a good feel on when we're going to see him in the outfield again.
Yeah, I think the longer this goes on, and the longer that you don't have a set date or a set timetable, I think the more concerning it becomes. You know, obviously he had a couple hits last night, hit a home run, and, you know, the offensive production hasn't been outstanding, but he's been okay. So from an offensive standpoint, I don't think you have to be too worried. But I think the larger issue is what's behind him. And listen, this is not an indictment of Nick Castellanos, but you simply do not want him playing as defensive right field for you, you know, six days a week. That's not what they brought him here to do. That's not what he's equipped to do. And over time, that certainly will come back and get you. I think we had a conversation going back to March. I said, I'm not really worried about the Phillies defense as long as the offense performs to its capabilities. But I mean, when I made that statement, I didn't realize that Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos would be manning the majority of innings in the outfield on a nightly basis. So, I mean, I do think it's a concern because, you know, although Bryce Harper is not a gold glove defender at this point, the drop off is quite significant just in terms of range alone.
Let's end with this, Bob. If there was a positive from last night, it was Aaron Nola, who continues to turn a corner here. It's three straight good starts. It might be the best three in a row he's had in years here. What are you seeing with Nola? Obviously, the Phillies need him to be really good, and he has been the last three starts.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's a little bit more confident. It just seems like he goes through stretches where he almost kind of expects things to go wrong, or, you know, that one inning, that one stretch that he seems to have or has had at different points. And right now he's really rolling, which we've seen from him. You know, even going back to last year in 2020, he had thrown together a few pretty impressive starts consecutively. So you kind of hope that he's able to maintain it. But the larger problem, and, you know, I tweeted this out the other night, and this is not on Aaron Nola or Zach Wheeler. I mean, just look at the last two starts alone, right? 14 and two-thirds innings combined, one earned run or one run allowed between the two. And the Phillies are 0-2 in those games, and it's kind of representative of a larger problem that they've run into this year. I mean, the Phillies are 2-9 when Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola start this season. You know, you just simply cannot compete if you're going to put your two best pitchers on the mound and not win behind them. And I'm, you know, there's been a couple instances where it's certainly been their fault, but by and large, it hasn't been, and they have to find a way to start winning these guys' starts.
Yeah, there's no question. And, Bob, actually, one more one with this is we've seen the Mets a lot, and it's always kind of funny to say, well, the Mets will screw it up or things will go bad. How impressed are you with the Mets early in this season, even without Jacob DeGrom? It feels like the manager has made a difference in Showalter, and they're just deep offensively. Guys like Mark Canna, Starling Marte, I'm going to be surprised if they just fall off and go away this time.
Yeah, it's not a super potent lineup. Like, you look at the numbers up and down, and you don't go, oh, wow. There's nobody that really jumps out at you. You know, McNeil's off to a pretty good start, but there's nobody that you go, oh, my goodness. But up and down the lineup, they're annoying. They kind of grind through at bats. They're just productive enough where they're a little bit of a threat, and they've just kind of been able to press all the right buttons. They seem like they're kind of in the midst of a special season. And, you know, I know, especially here, and we've seen the Mets collapse before, and we all like to do the LOL Mets thing, but I have to be honest with you, you get a win like last night, and all of a sudden you start to kind of feel like you're invincible. And they wake up this morning, they're 19-9, and you can say, hey, small sample size, this and that, but they kind of feel like they have a special thing going right now. And I'm not saying that they do or that they're going to just run away with the East, but you can't objectively watch this team right now and say, oh, yeah, the Phillies are definitely equipped to cut down a 6-7 game deficit against these guys. And, you know, I think you really would have to squint very hard to make that a reality.
Very hard. So hard you wouldn't be able to see afterwards. Bob, we always appreciate you hopping on. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right, talk to you, man.
There he goes, Bob Wankel of Crossing Broad. Yeah, the Mets. Tucker, it is easy for us to laugh at the Mets. Like, oh, I'll laugh at the Mets. Ha-ha, they'll fall apart. They're doing this without Jacob DeGrom. And Bob said it there, they don't have a great lineup, like one or two, you know, special players. Lindor is good, but he's not, you know, he was not what he was a few years ago in Cleveland. But they're deep, and they're good, and they have pitching. They're good. I hate it, but they're good.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say they're built the right way because Steve Cohen's paid like $270 million to build that team this season, and he paid Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom just unspeakable sums of money to headline that rotation. But you look at their team, you look at their bench, you look at their lineup, I mean, they're deep, right? You look
Very.
At the Phillies, and we talk about the Phillies being the worst team money can buy. I mean, the Mets may have spent more, but they spent it in the right places. Like they can pull a guy like J.D. Davis off the bench last night to hit a double. The Phillies lineup right now, even though it has Castellanos and Schwarber and Harper and Realmuto at the top, each making over $20 million, it kind of ends there. Like, Johan Camargo right now is like their third or fourth best hitter. And I guess we haven't mentioned Alec Boehm yet, but, you know, we talk about this team. They go, like, six deep when it comes to position players.
Yeah.
Like they don't go eight deep. They don't go 10 deep like teams like the Dodgers or even the Mets right now. They have, like, six guys who I think are actual major league regulars every day.
That's not enough. And I always think over 162 deeper teams, they find a way. They withstand injury. Three guys get going to slumps, well, you have six more. And that's how those teams win. Ken is in Elkton, Maryland. He's been waiting. We got him up right now. Hey, Ken.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Here. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. First of all, Joe's got to go. I'm glad to see him be back in the lineup. And my birthday is, I told Tucker I had the Royal Flush, although February 2nd might just beat me out. But as far as politics, I got Gandhi.
Ooh.
As far as television and movies, I've got Lorraine Bracco and Kelly Ripa. As far as comedy, I've got Groucho Marx and Lou Abbott. And as far as legal defense, I got Johnny Cochran.
Wow. That is a royal flush there, Ken.
That's a royal flush. That's a royal flush.
Yeah, and you got some character. I mean, to throw Gandhi in there to start, to end it with Johnny Cochran, wow. Johnny Cochran is not only a famous lawyer, he's an all-time character, too.
Absolutely. If the glove don't fit, you
must acquit. Ken, appreciate the phone call. I remember, and we'll get you in the mix, Ken. I remember when I was a kid during the O.J. Simpson trial. Johnny Cochran was like one of the most famous people in America. He was on the news every night. Everyone was talking about Johnny Cochran. He was spoofed in Saturday Night Live. And a couple of years ago, there was the People vs. O.J. Simpson. You ever watch that show?
I did watch that show.
It was very good. I thought the Johnny Cochran character was hilarious. And you had who was the Ross from Friends? Was
David Schwimmer.
He was the Kardashian.
He kept saying juice over and over again.
Juice!
That became like a meme for a while.
Yes. He, and then he was He was on the defense team, right? He was part of
He played Robert Kardashian.
Right, right. His friend Robert Kardashian. And then, yeah, I love that show. That was a really good show. 215-592.
You know, someone got mad at me because I spoiled the ending.
The ending of what?
Of the show.
Of The People versus O.J. Simpson?
Yeah. Like, I was talking about it at a, I think I was in college. I was talking about it at a party. And someone was like, oh no, I didn't watch the last episode. Don't spoil it for me.
I'm going to do it right now for audience. He gets off.
I'm like, that was 23 years ago. I don't feel that bad about it.
I mean, how could anyone not? All right, whatever. I mean, people don't know the story there. I mean, obviously, O.J. Simpson was acquitted of what he was charged against. 215-592-9494. Let's grab Max at Swedesbury. We want to talk about the Phillies here. Hey, Max.
Hey, Joe. Great show. I just jumped on because I just got done work, but I was talking to Tucker. Here's what I'll tell you. Everybody, I've been watching baseball for a long time, and I remember when they used to give the Yankees credit. Oh, they got the greatest GM. They got advanced caps. They had one thing. And that was they had the money to pay for their mistakes. Kevin Brown, Esteban Loaiza, Hideki Irabu, Gary Sheffield, they paid all these guys a king's ransom, but if they were duds, they could push them aside.
It's a great point. You know, Kayagawa, there was a million of those guys over the years. Yes. Yep.
Problem is now, yeah, the Mets collapsed, but we got the Yankees in our division now. And this guy is playing like it's Monopoly money.
Well, you know, Max, it's a great point. I was reading a story a couple days ago because I'm sure you saw they just released Robinson Cano because they had to make a decision.
They owed him $40 million, yeah, now, and they released him. Who can do that?
Nobody. You know, so it's funny you brought this up because I was reading a story the other day about Buck Showalter, and obviously he started his career with the Yankees, you know, 30 years ago or whatever as a manager, and the columnist was making the point that when he first was a manager, he worked for Steinbrenner, and now he's working for the new Steinbrenner up in New York.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, it's just because if you can, because everybody's going to make mistakes. I don't care what general manager you are, you can be the greatest thing around. You're still going to put money into a player that either turns out to be a dud or doesn't give you nothing. But how many owners could absorb that? And that's the biggest difference. And I think that's going to be the hardest thing. You're going to have, as an organization, the Phillies are going to have to keep up, because if you look at the owners, and that was the thing with George Steinbrenner. He never looked at the Yankees as a business. It was a game that he wanted to win. When these owners look at it as a business, winning comes secondary, business is first. And Cohen, you can see, he's worried about building casinos and everything. He's using it. This is a hobby for him.
Well, and he's a fan. It's a hobby. He's a fan. It's like Mark Cuban of baseball. He's going to spend, and it does make the degree of difficulty for the Phillies higher. I mean, they gotta be right. They gotta know what they're doing here if they're gonna do the right thing and win. It's true.
And you can't make mistakes. And the thing is, you know, I think that as far as, you know, baseball is a long season, but games like that yesterday crush you. They crush you, and it's only one game. Yeah, I get it. But when something is that close and you don't get it, that can last for weeks. And I'll tell you, I mean, like I said, Girardi, he's an issue. He is. I don't know what happened to him, because when I remember, although maybe he was in New York because he was overrated, because, again, like we said, they had the money to hide the mistakes. So maybe, you know, we really didn't get a good view of your Girardi. It's hard to say.
I think that's what, you know, I think as time passes here, Max, and we appreciate the phone call, that's the truth. That he was kind of covered by what he had there in New York, and he didn't have to show how good of a manager he was. And he's done a bad job here. I mean, there's no other way to say it. He's done a bad job. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard. We'll come back. And we'll pass along a story we heard today from the Eagles, from their new young offensive lineman. It might have been the most up and down draft night of any player in the league this year, and we'll react to the Sixers and the final against the Miami Heat in Game 3 coming up. 215-592-9494 Sports Radio 94 WIP. Welcome back, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley's behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. It's how you hop in as we debate Joe Girardi. Should he stay? Should he go? It was 88% earlier in our poll question said go, which is remarkable. And I think that is a combination of the reality of the last 3 years, the lack of energy coming out of that dugout for a long time now, and last night. I mean, last night was a disaster of a loss for the Philadelphia Phillies. So we'll get back to all that in a second, and your birthday that you share with someone famous. We've got some great answers tonight for our prize to be named later. But I want to bring this to you first, because Cam Jurgens, you know, the Eagles rookies talk today, and you get to know these guys a little bit for the first time. Jordan Davis just seems like a really gregarious kid. And N'Kobe Dean, I didn't realize was on track to become an engineer, maybe a doctor, like really smart kid. And
he can do that in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, just get
you only play like what 17 weeks a year.
Plenty of time to go to
medical
school.
Imagine if we only did 17 shows a year. How much free time you'd have?
It's a lot.
I could be an engineer too.
Well, I mean, it's not just you don't just go become an engineer. Like, and not everyone could be an engineer. You realize that? Like, you got to be really smart. N'Kobe Dean is. He's choosing to play football, which is good for the Eagles right now. But how about Cam Jurgens? Listen to this draft night story from the Eagles' new offensive lineman from Nebraska. This is it's a little different than what you usually get from those who don't live in that area of the country. Here's Cam Jurgens on his draft night story.
Get picked, and, you know, we're upstairs, we're celebrating, and all of a sudden we hear this loud, you know, thunder and lightning outside. And I'm like, all right, guys, we got to go downstairs now. So we all start going downstairs. My grandma doesn't walk up and downstairs very well. So we're like, all right, you need help going downstairs, grandma. She's like, no, it's been a great night. You know, I'm not moving. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, whatever. I'm like, Jesus. So, like, it was just a hilarious, like, kind of funny story from the night. And, like, that was I think I'm going to remember that for a long time. It's just, like, excitement and then all of a sudden chaos of a tornado and thunder and lightning and hail coming in. It was crazy.
That does sound crazy. Now, and that's not totally foreign here. Didn't we had tornadoes in this area. What was it, late August last year? We had those crazy storms. But for the most part, it's not something that I think we think about very often around here where it's like, yeah, we're celebrating. We're having a party. Oh, no, let's get downstairs. We're having a tornado. But that was Cam Jurgens' draft night story. And how about that? I hope to be at that point of life that his grandma's at. Like, I'm good. It has been a good night. Just leave me here. I'm all right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm there yet, but I that is funny, and that's a great thing, and I think it shows how much his grandmother cares about him, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I think that's something we don't really talk about a lot on draft night. For, like, a lot of these people, the parents, grandparents, friends, family, like, everyone in that close circle of whoever got drafted, like, they all share a part of that.
Sure. I mean, especially the most immediate family. Like, how do you think these kids get to these practices and go on these teams? And they're a gigantic part of it. I was watching, I think it was the Jets drafted that tight end from, where was he from? Ohio State, maybe? The Jets drafted a tight end from somewhere, maybe Ohio State. But he grew up in New York as a Jets fan. So, like, he had all his buddies there, and they were all, like, they're all wearing Jets gear before he was even drafted. And then, like, I'm sure they would have gone nuts and been excited if he was drafted by anyone. It doesn't matter. Like, they're friends in the NFL. Their brother, they're friends in the NFL. But, like, the level of excitement in that room when they put that video up, it was pretty awesome. Gary is in Whitehall. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Joe, Julio, back on a nighttime. What's happening?
Oh, I'm good, Gary. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm better than Weekend at Bernie's. I'll tell you that much. I'm kind of hoping he's packing his bags. Maybe he'll go back into the booth. That's pretty long.
Yeah, well, yeah, he got an off night tonight, so maybe Joe spent his time packing up his belongings here. Yeah, I mean, it's the Weekend at Bernie's nickname is perfect because it feels like he's asleep in the dugout. Just put some glasses on him.
Yep. What was the quote? What kind of guy invites you to his house for the weekend and dies on you?
Oh, it's good. I haven't watched Weekend at Bernie's in a long time.
But it's a good movie. I never thought that a fellow player like that, a former player, somebody who's been managing teams for a while, would be that involved with analytics and that binder. I just don't. I mean, what he did Thursday Wednesday with Wheeler, taking him out after 78 pitches, and you burn up Alvarado for one pitch, you don't use him again, and then what he did Thursday night, you know, Familia, 1, 2, 3, 10 pitches, and then you take him out, like he can't pitch another inning. I mean, the defensive moves, I understand you're shorthanded with the outfield because of Harper, and then what's his name? Just Castellanos got hurt, so you put Quinn in. But why wouldn't you put Burling in to take Schwarber out of there for defensive help for a little more speed in the outfield because, I mean, I think it's just time for him to go.
Yeah, and then on top of that, Gary, you know, in the ninth, in the bottom of the ninth, after they blew the lead, you know, Quinn had to come in because Castellanos got hurt. So obviously he's in that spot in the lineup. He could have pinch hit Didi. Didi could have pinch hit for Quinn, and he didn't choose to do it. It's almost like he was conceding the game at that point.
Exactly. I got a slew of birthdays. One is the big unit, Randy Johnson, the King, Arnold Palmer, Jose Feliciano, Ryan Felipe, Bill O'Reilly. The list goes on.
Wow, that's a big day. What's your birthday? What day is it?
September 10th.
September 10th. Wow, you got.
And eventually, I have Randy Johnson's rookie card, and I would like to get a hold of him somehow, some way, and get his autograph because I mean we share the same birthday. I mean he's a couple years older than I am, but
probably a couple inches taller than you too, right?
Let's see. He was what, 6'10"?
Yeah.
So he's got me by 14 inches. So.
Gary, man, I appreciate the call. Have a good weekend.
You too, Joe. Thank you.
There we go. Gary in Whitehall sharing a birthday with Randy Johnson. You ever know anyone that was actually 6'10"? I don't mean like you're at the Sixers game or an NBA game and you walk. You ever know someone that was that tall?
Not 6'10", no.
So I had a friend, you know, ish, like not someone I would talk to today or call, but like he was friendly with his girlfriend was friends with my now wife, but girlfriend in college. His name was Craig. I think he's 6'9". He's the biggest person I've ever like spent time with. 6'9". It's amazing when you stand next to someone that is that big, like for a long time, you feel like I felt like a kid.
Yeah. Like my dad's friend, my uncle Alan, he's like 6'7", 6'8". It's just weird. Like, he can't go into certain basements because he can't stand up all the way.
Of course.
If we, you know, go to like a Phillies game, he has to sit on the aisle because his legs don't fit. It's kind of weird. I don't know. We don't talk enough about how tall people are discriminated against in modern society.
So you want more accommodations?
Yeah. I just want more space. And I think everyone would benefit from that, wouldn't you?
Well, here's
like, has anyone ever gone to a stadium and thought, it's too spacious here, I want more people closer to me?
No, I agree. Well, we know what the problem is. They want to stuff as many seats in there as they can. It's like, have you ever noticed over the last 10 or 15 years how crowded parking lots have become? Like, just like you go to the store, like Target or Costco or whatever. It's because we keep making cars bigger. The spaces don't get much bigger, though. Everyone has an SUV. It's impossible to move around in a parking lot. You back
no
up.
No one told you to get a Toyota Town and Country, whatever you got. Chrysler?
Yeah, but like, but
Toyota Sienna?
No, but it's not me. I'm mad that everyone else has the SUVs.
You have a minivan.
No, I understand, but not my other car is not that. I have just a Subaru Forester. But like, I don't mean that, right? Like, people have minivans, people have SUVs. I mean, like this. What's it called? Like with the Tahoe, you know, like the big, the gigantic,
like the huge trucks and everything. Yeah.
What are we doing with the? Like, all right, fine. If that's what everyone's gonna have, like you're worried about the 6'9" people. I'm worried about everyone driving around in these things. There's no room in parking lots. They haven't made the spaces bigger.
Especially in the city, where parking lots are notoriously tight anyway.
Yeah, it's a problem. I think it's a bigger problem than your worry about 6'9 people. There's not that many.
What do you think there's more of in the world, people over 6'8 or Toyota Siennas?
Toyota Siennas? How many people are 6'8 walking around?
How many people are driving minivans around?
Way more than 6'8 people. There's not. I mean, other than your NBA playoff games, there's not that many 6'8 people just running around town. It's jarring when you are next to one of those people. 215-592-9494. All right, we should go through some of our names here. See who we who's our favorite people here. You were keeping track of some of these names here.
I'll admit this is a very partial list because I've been busy tonight.
Well, what you have there.
So Mary Beth at Billy Joel.
Mm-hmm. That was the first one.
That was the first one. Steve in the Northeast and Josh in Upper Darby, both at Tom Brady.
Yeah, that was our first double up.
Yeah, I think that was the only one we had. I don't know, we had another one later.
Well, we doubled up on my birthday because we had a caller.
That's true.
Yeah.
Which we decided that'll just be in last place because you hate Fran Drescher.
I don't hate Fran Drescher. I mistook her career at one point tonight. I don't hate T-Pain. I just, like, that's, I mean, we're getting famous people here, ex-presidents, We got John Glenn or somebody. Some of them went to space. John McCain. Like, we got some great people here.
Scott and Perkins, he had Bob Barker and Frank Sinatra.
That's unbelievable. I mean, think about that. Bob Barker and Frank Sinatra you share a birthday with. I'm sitting here with Fran Drescher and T-Pain. It's a joke, comparatively.
Rachel and Perkesey had Snoop Dogg. Alan Lee Hyten had George Washington, which I do like the idea of having your birthday on a holiday. Like, you perpetually just get a free day on your birthday.
Yeah, we had someone who mentioned their kids, right? It was July 4th.
Their kids had the birthday on July 4th.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Chris in Phoenixville had Steven Spielberg and Brad Pitt.
Yeah, he covered the movie industry pretty well there. We had a Martin Scorsese at one point, too.
Yeah, we had that. Stephen Downingtown had Ringo Starr. Gary Nambler had Francis Scott Key.
Yeah, I feel like as time went on, Francis Scott Key got less exciting. We heard some cool names.
You know what bothers me? So he wrote the Star-Spangled Banner during the War of 1812.
Yeah.
But it happened in 1814. What's up with that?
What do you mean? The War of 1812 happened in 1814?
Yeah, like the Battle of Baltimore was in 1814. That's when he wrote the song.
But when did the war start?
I guess 1812.
Yeah, didn't they burn down the White House? Isn't that how it started?
Yeah, something like that. James Madison's wife, like, saved all the presidential portraits.
How about that? All right, we'll pick a winner here. But more importantly, we got a victory to react to. Sixers 99, Miami 79. This is a series. The Sixers win tonight by 20. Though, I have to say, just watching tonight, and Top Kelly's going to come up at 10 with his reaction to the game, and he got a chance to really dive into it as we were doing the show tonight. But as I looked up tonight and watched during the show, I didn't feel like tonight was a 20-point game. Like, they pulled away. They won the game by 20 in the end. I didn't think the final score was indicative of the game. It was a closer game. And it took in the fourth quarter, Tyrese Maxey really helped pull them away. And there was one play. How much time do you think was left when Maxey made that play? About 4 or 5 minutes?
It was about 4 minutes or so.
Yeah.
They were up about 8 or 9 with 4 minutes to go.
I think it was 8 or 9. I think 9, but maybe it was 8. Loose ball. It was kind of like going back and forth, like almost like each team stole it from one another. And then Maxey's running down. He loses it off his hand. It's about to go out of bounds, which would have been possession Miami down on the Sixers' end.
Yeah, it was 83-74 with four and a half minutes.
Okay, so nine. So basically, Miami could have had possession with a chance to cut it to 7 or to 6. It felt like the game in that moment. And Maxey made a ridiculous play, kind of flying out of bounds, threw the ball over his head. I don't think he had much control over where he threw it. He was just trying to save the ball. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say he made an amazing pass to Harden. I think he just flung the ball over his head. But Harden was able to catch the ball around midcourt. They turn it back into offense the other way. That felt like the game. Like, that was the moment where I was like, all right, we could exhale. They're going to find a way to win this game. Miami all night was really poor offensively. The only reason they were kind of in the game most of the time was their rebounding, their second chance points. Kind of an ugly night of basketball. Really low score. I mean, Miami scored 79 points tonight. And the biggest factor, other than what I just mentioned with Maxey and the play at the end, Joel Embiid's presence. I didn't think Joel was overwhelming tonight. I mean, offensively, what do you have? He lost 20 points tonight. He wasn't overwhelming.
He had 18 on 5 of 12 shooting.
Yeah, he wasn't overwhelming. But defensively, his presence being back there tonight, it changed this again. I mean, it reflipped the series, and now it feels like as long as he keep playing, and I know late in the game he kind of went down and grabbed his face, but as long as he keep playing, the Sixers at least have a puncher's chance now with Game 4 coming up Sunday.
Well, he significantly raises their floor, right? Like you don't get the possessions and you don't get those 5, 6, 7 minute droughts where they just look helpless on either side of the floor because he's just on the court. And you look tonight, you mentioned that he only scored 79. You know they scored 20 points in just one quarter tonight?
Wow.
They had 17, 17, 31, and they had 14 in the fourth quarter. Sixers outscored them 31-14 in the fourth quarter and pulled away. And yeah, I mean, you watch tonight, and I don't think this is indicative of how the rest of the series goes. Miami only shot 35% from the field and 7-30 from three. I think those numbers are going to, you know, come up a little bit as the series goes along. But you mentioned, I mean, just Joel Embiid being out there and his presence and the incredible gap between him and DeAndre Jordan or even Paul Reed or Charles Bassey or Paul Millsap or George Niang masquerading as a center, just having Joel Embiid out there on the court, whether he's 70% or 80%, whatever it is, it raises this team's floor significantly, and it makes them far more competitive. Even on nights where you look at the end of the first half, I think they had 4 points, in the last 5 or 6 minutes of the second quarter, they still won that quarter 20-17 because they're playing unbelievable defense.
The biggest difference tonight, shooting wise, and this tends to happen in the postseason. Teams will the role players will shoot better at home, and they'll shoot worse on the road. You know, tonight Danny Green had as many threes as the entire Miami Heat team. Danny Green was 7 of 9 from three, and he kept making big ones in the corner. I mean, there was like a run, and then it was back and forth, and it was like, oh, Miami's going to come back here, and then boom, Danny Green in the corner. He was 7 of 9.
Him and Maxey combined to be 12 of 15 from three tonight.
Remarkable. I mean, the whole team, as Tucker said, the whole team for Miami was 7 of 30. Danny Green was 7 of 9 from three. It's got to be one of the best three-point shooting games of his entire career in the postseason. Danny Green was significant tonight. I mean, he tied Maxey. He tied Maxey for the leading scorer on the team. 215-592-9494 to react. Sixers win tonight, 99-79. We have ourselves at least some hope. We have ourselves a reason to watch on Sunday and not to just ignore this thing. Joel Embiid came back. His presence was felt. Maxey just makes plays, and the whole team feeds off his energy. And credit to Danny Green, who had an incredible shooting night from downtown. Jeff is in Phoenixville. Jeff wants to talk about the Sixers win tonight. Hey, Jeff.
Joe, what's going on, buddy? How you been?
Good, Jeff. What do you think about tonight?
I feel better. I'll say it like this. If we get effort like that all the time, I don't fear many teams because the team just played so in sync. The defense was great. Heck, even Thybul showed up disrupted Miami's flow there. But my problem is I don't know if we're going to get that kind of effort from Harden every single night. But I just think Joel being there and being in there, it kind of reminds me of the old Willis Reed thing, you know, years ago when he just limped on the court and that made the Knicks win. You know, just because it was an emotional thing. But he was a warrior tonight. It's just amazing. And, again, I said this from the get-go, from when they wanted to trade for Harden last year. I said, do not trade Maxey. I told Joe. I told Richie during the day. I said, you can't trade Maxey. You can't get rid of the kid. And now we see why. The kid's going to be a superstar. He really is. He's got that smile. He has that I-don't-care attitude. And, you know, they get this next game, all bets are off. All bets are off. I really feel that because Joel will get more conditioning back in.
Yeah, well, and I think the momentum, too, just of having Joel, like if they could get this next game and obviously bring him back with them to Miami, it would change the series. And the Maxey thing, it's incredible, his rise from where he was. And this happens once in a while. But, Jeff, to watch a player go from, you know, he wasn't even a lottery pick. And then last year he showed promise. And then this year it's just been like an amazing rise by him.
Can I say this, too? I hate to say this. I really hate to say this, but I have to say thank you, Ben Simmons, for being a total loser and not wanting to play this year because that put Maxey in the spotlight and kind of made him his transition speed up, and it worked. And Ben, I don't think, honestly, if you ask me, Ben is never going to play basketball again. That's my opinion. I might be wrong, but I just don't think
I think you're right, Jeff. I've thought this too. I think he's going to be done playing. And Jeff, listen, man, I appreciate the phone call and fun night for the Sixers here. And as far as the Max thing, that's true. If Ben Simmons is here all year, Maxey doesn't get a chance to have the ball in his hands to become the player he became. Sometimes in any sport, but certainly basketball, opportunity has to come, you know, it just doesn't happen. Like you need it needs to be set up by your team, and this one wasn't, obviously. Or it needs to be circumstantial. Look at Jordan Poole with the Golden State Warriors. Why did he get the opportunity? Because Klay Thompson took 2 years to come back from his knee injury. If Klay's Klay and never gets hurt, do we know who Jordan Poole is? No, they didn't have him, and Jordan Poole emerged, and now they're all together again. But, I mean, Maxey, he got an opportunity, and he's run with it.
And I think it should also be pointed out, like, he didn't play well in the first half. He didn't make a basket until the third quarter. He had 2 points on a pair of foul shots in the first half, and then he just was lights out from, you know, midway through the third quarter on. It's something where you see a lot of players, and you can throw Ben Simmons in this, where if they have an off night early on, and you could say it a lot about Embiid early in his career, if they have an off night in the first half, they shut it down in the second half, right? Like, they don't come out fighting even harder after halftime. Maxey did just that. I mean, he came out in the second half. You could argue he was the best player on the court for the final 20 minutes tonight.
Yeah, what do they say about young players? They don't know what they don't know. That's what I think of when I watch him. Like, he doesn't. He just.
He's too young to realize the moment.
Yeah, he just plays. Let's grab Josh a minute. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Joe. Just leaving the stadium. Love the energy. Incredible. Unlike Father's Day last year, we got something to watch for this year. I mean, Maxey, let me tell you something. The most selfless play of the night when he tracks down that long pass, jumps into the front row, and throws the ball back to Harden. I mean, this guy's got everything we wanted. You know what? He's got every piece of every intangible. And he's not afraid of the spotlight's not too big for him. It's never too big. It's true.
Josh, I don't know how you felt in the arena just watching here at the studio. I thought that saved the game because that was a 9-point game. If Miami gets that ball there, they can cut it to 7 or 6. I thought that was the game when Maxey made that play.
Absolutely. Danny Green couldn't miss tonight. Silent T is, as always, himself silent all the time. All Tobias all the time. He sucks.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I mean, you just got. It's fun watching Maxey. It's just, he makes basketball fun. He's everything you want. By the way, if the Sixers can get B.J. Tucker, he is Philly tough. I don't care. Say whatever you want about
Josh, him. I love him. For years, I've been sitting here saying they need to get him. And Tucker and I were actually talking during the show tonight that, man, they're missing that guy. He will take on everyone and do the dirty work.
You're right. And you know what? You don't need that from Embiid to step into it. He's your goon. He's that guy, you know? He's Mr. Grit. I love him. And you know what? He does just what Ben Simmons does on offense. He would just stand underneath. He'd be a 5-on-4. But he's that guy defensively.
Yeah, no, he is. And Josh, appreciate it. He can hit a 3 once in a while, too. He's not a bad shooter. So
get some rebounds, too.
Yeah, he's tons of rebounds. He's a tremendous kind of playoff player, and he's been that for a lot of years, run a lot of different teams. All right, fun show tonight. TK is coming up next. A lot of reaction on the Sixers. If you're leaving the game right now, hop on. 215-592-9494. Talk to Tom Kelly. His reaction, Sixers win. Big night for them, and we've got ourselves a series. Have a great night. We'll talk next week on Sports Radio 94 WIP.